Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
People don't just get adjustments because they're disabled, for example. There has to be a trigger that ignites the duty to make adjustments.
How would you go about reassuring these people that they're going to be heard? And that, like, it's not just going to be stigma attached, or they're going to have to show proof.
Acknowledging that, you know, we could have done things differently doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be liable in a tribunal. In all employment relationships, whether it's discrimination, reasonable adjustments,
anything,
communication is key.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Welcome back to HRER. A little bit of a different environment today. Michelle Healy's joining me again because Alyssa's had to go home today.
Yep.
A little bit poorly. And we've got a guest in the form of Chelsea Brooke Ward.
Hi.
From Park Square Barristers.
It is.
The same place as our beloved previous guest, Simon Anderson.
Yes.
That's a big name to live up to. Pressure.
It is. Yeah. Big shoes to fill.
He was one of my favourite guests, so no pressure at all, Chelsea. But yeah, we're going to talk about predominantly reasonable adjustments in the workplace. But before we do, can you just sort of give the viewers, listeners, a little bit of a background about sort of maybe your career and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm head of the employment team at Park Square Barristers. I predominantly practice in employment law, so represent employer and employees in employment tribunals. Covers a wide range of areas, from discrimination to whistleblowing to TUPE transfers and that kind of thing.
I know what TUPE stands for, I think. It's like previous employees going to a new company.
It is.
Transfer, I know that one. There we go. We're going to predominantly start talking about reasonable adjustments, because that's very on theme at the minute, would you say, Michelle?
Yeah, absolutely. So any cases that you've recently handled where there's, you know, something maybe a little bit different, or something what our listeners can actually learn from. So if you've got anything current at the moment that you want to talk us through?
Yeah, so I think with reasonable adjustments claims, there is a wide misunderstanding of what is required to prove a reasonable adjustments claim in a tribunal. But also sort of on the ground in the workplace, what employers have to do and when they have to do it. People don't just get adjustments because they're disabled, for example. There has to be a trigger that ignites the duty to make adjustments. Mm-hmm. And I think some employers really struggle with, well, what does that mean? What do I have to do? And it doesn't mean that they have to bend over backwards and give the employee everything that they've asked for. Means that they have to take steps to try and alleviate some of the disadvantage. And I think there is often a unawareness of how to approach an employee when they've come to an employer saying that they want adjustments because they're disabled or whatever the circumstances might be. And one thing that I often find, particularly when it gets to sort of a tribunal stage, this is sort of the end of the issue, if you like. And I think one of the things that's common in pretty much all the cases that I've looked at is the lack of communication in the workplace around this issue. And one of the things that I often advise clients, if I'm advising them before it gets to litigation, is work backwards. So work from what the employee is saying is causing them an issue, and try and identify what the specific issues are. Because quite often you'll get an employee saying, I don't want to come into work, so I want to work from home, for example, because I've got anxiety, which is good, but doesn't necessarily trigger the duty to make reasonable adjustments, because an employer needs to know what the specific disadvantage is and what the provision criteria or policy that they apply is that's causing that disadvantage. And so having a conversation and trying to drill down into, well, what is it about coming into work that's the issue?
what is the specific disadvantage? What's the difficulty? And then work forwards from that to see what can be done. Because it might be, so in that situation, for example, it might not be anything that the employer is implementing, but it might be that they don't like getting the bus at 8 o'clock because it's too full. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily something that the employer is imposing on the employee, but could be reframed to something like...
It's part of the environment.
Yeah, but yeah. It also could be that they start at 9, so their only option is to get an 8 o'clock bus. So it could be, well, I tell you what, we'll start your working day from 11 so that you can get a quieter bus. And okay. And once you identify the actual difficulty and then work from there, and I think people do it the wrong way round because the test that the tribunal applies is the other way around. What's the PCP? What's the disadvantage? What's the step that should be taken? And so people approach it in that way, whereas in reality, that's not the best way to approach it because you'll find yourself in difficulty in understanding what you actually need to do on the ground.
Yeah, and then when it comes to reasonable adjustment, as you said, it's not necessarily what they're asking for. We can't all stay and work at home, especially if you've got like a team to manage or you're part of a team at decision making. So it can be also things like, you know, if they get a bit overwhelmed, having a side room that they can go to, you know, if they are worried about being late, maybe you could give them a flexibility of a 15-minute time window to start, etc. So there are lots of things that can be looked at, aren't there, for reasonable adjustment. Yeah. And then in terms of disability and something like maybe a VPA or a occupational health report, how important is it to do what's been requested there?
Each case is going to be case specific. And it is important for employers to have some type of guidance because this is one of those situations where it's a bit of a mix between workplace policies, medical issues, and personal subjective needs. Yeah. So there's a bit of a mixture of the type of knowledge or information that you need. So it's helpful for an employer to get occupational health advice or some type of medical advice in terms of recommendations. That isn't, however, conclusive to what should or should not be done. What the tribunal will look at is whether the step, one, was capable of removing a disadvantage, and two, whether it was reasonable. So you might have a situation where you've got quite a small employer. Mm-hmm. There will be less obligations on them, if you like, than a large employer. So for example, if it's an individual that's struggling with part of their duties, so they can't do a specific element of their role and it might be attending a meeting or management or something else, that will be much harder for a smaller employer to remove that duty and give it to somebody else than it would be for a larger employer who has more staff available for those duties to go on to. So it's about looking at what is reasonable, taking into account the resources and size of the employer. And I think one sort of aspect in terms of reasonableness, because it's one of those lawyer words, isn't it? Well, what does it mean? But it requires the employer to really think about the step that's been asked or recommended for. And I think sometimes they don't take the time to evaluate and analyse what that would mean for the business. Mm-hmm. If they can do it, and it's easy, it's got no impact on any, you know, business service, client service, customer care, and all the other sort of things that are important to the business, profits, sales, etc., then there's no issue. Simply implement it. But if it's going to have a negative impact on the business in some way, then that really needs to be analysed and it needs to be documented so that if the employer ends up in a tribunal, they have evidence to justify their rationale behind why they thought it wasn't reasonable. So it's this balancing exercise about, well, can we do it without impact or is it going to have a really significant impact on the business that makes it unreasonable?
So just really from the point of view of doing nothing and overdoing. So what have you seen there?
Yeah, in terms of, I think a big one at the minute is where you have a number of different departments and a line manager might not necessarily be the one that has the authority or the resources to implement adjustments. It has to go through a policy or a procedure. So, you know, someone higher up the management chain needs to make those decisions, or there might be a different department that orders auxiliary aids, for example. And one of the things that I often find is that line managers will say, well, I passed it on to Joe Bloggs and it was their responsibility for implementing it. And, you know, when it goes through those different stages, there is more opportunity for it to be forgotten about. And I see that happen quite a lot. But the reality is the claim would be brought against the employer as a whole. So it doesn't matter whether the line manager passed it to Joe Bloggs. The employer is still responsible for implementing that reasonable adjustment. So that's one sort of avenue that can go wrong. The second is sometimes that employers are afraid that they're going to do something wrong, or they don't feel like they have the resources or the ability to remove the disadvantage fully. So they don't do anything, or they, you know, bow down to all the demands that the employee makes. And then you end up in situations where Jane Bloggs has been working at home for the past 3 years and the employer doesn't know what she's been doing. And, you know, there's no productivity.
We've all seen that one.
We have, yeah.
And it comes back to the point that communication is key. And if line managers are struggling with what can or cannot be done, or what should or should not be done, seek advice, occupational health. But the most important thing is not to do anything. And I think one thing that is not really taken up by most small employers is things such as disability passports. And that's a document which, you know, you can get precedent on online, I'm sure, just by Googling it. And it's a document that you work through with the individual employee, where the individual employee can set out what they think might help, what their specific disadvantages are, so that you have something to keep looking back at. And more than not doing anything, trial periods for certain adjustments can be really helpful. And I think the case law indicates that if a trial period was something that could have been done and wasn't done, that is potentially a failure to make a reasonable adjustment. So if you don't think it might work, but there's a possibility that it would work, then you could trial it. If it doesn't work, you've got evidence to suggest that what you did didn't work. But if there isn't anything that can be done, redeployment is also an option. And I think most people look at these requests from a really legal perspective, because ultimately, if it's breached, it ends up in the tribunal. But just applying common sense, I think, is sometimes, you know, the best thing to do. Overcompensating. It is also a massive issue, as I mentioned before, simply bowing down to all the demands of the employee. And again, this comes back to really analysing the situation and what is reasonable. Again, sometimes these are case specific, but a big one is people want to work from home full time.
Yeah, that, I think that's one of the biggest ones at the moment, isn't it?
Yes.
People coming along and saying that they need to work from home, and a lot of the time they don't really know why.
Yes. And it simply, a lot of the time, is because I've got a disability, or because I've got anxiety, because I've got depression, or because I've got PTSD. But when you drill down into the symptoms and the disadvantage, it's not actually the coming into work half the time that's the issue. The passports and having all that stuff ironed out really, really does help. And also just keeping them under review. So how is it working for the business? If it is the case that an employer has allowed them to work from home for a period of time, is there something that isn't working for the business during that period that you can have the employee in and say to them, look, we've trialed this now, but we're not seeing any productivity, or these are the issues that we're having. So we're going to, you know, review the adjustments that we have in place and go back to the beginning and see whether there's anything else that can be done. Mm. And I think a lot of the time, if the employee feels heard, there is usually limited scope for contentious disagreement in terms of litigation or a trial. It usually ends up in the tribunal where the employee doesn't feel heard or seen and just ignored. Mm-hmm. So communication is vital in these absolutely. Scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I've got one for you. You mentioned like a few mental health based things there. And I'm not sure if it's like at the minute, but throughout like the sort of insurgence that in history, I think people have felt a certain stigma about talking to people they don't specifically know either. Do you know what I mean? They won't necessarily have a close relationship with the HR or in this situation. But my question is like, how would you go about reassuring these people that they're going to be heard and that like it's not just going to be stigma attached or they're going to have to show proof or something?
Yeah, and I think having somebody supportive to have these discussions is important. And again, it's going to come back to the sort of size and resources of the individual employer. Having policies in place that can be given to the employee so that they can, you know, have a look at that and look at the process and look at what they need to inform their employer of before the duty to make reasonable adjustments is triggered is usually helpful. Or just having the conversation with them to say, look, we want to help you, but we need to understand where it is that we can help. And to do that, we need to understand where it is you're having difficulties, and we can't do that unless we're informed. And it might be that, you know, you inform them that everything is confidential. Of course, it's not going to go on any further. But ultimately, a reasonable adjustment obligation is only invoked if the employer knows of the specific disadvantage that the PCP is creating. So it's important for employees to know that they're not just entitled to request things and give very vague assertions of disadvantages. So it swings and roundabouts. There is stigma and things attached, but I do think we're moving in a direction where that is getting somewhat better, but just a compassionate approach to it.
Yeah, I agree. Don't get me wrong, you don't really tend to find people struggling, I think, like inwardly in small businesses, because people tend to know each other very well and they'll speak about it amongst themselves. But like you say there, I guess it can kind of get lost in the noise.
Yes.
In like a big corpy type place.
Yes. Yeah.
So when we think about managing risks, so I've had a situation where a line manager has been asked for to consider reasonable adjustment for one of their employees, and it's that person's not very well equipped on what they should be doing and has gone overboard. And now it's turned into, you're treating me differently to other people as a result of trying to accommodate reasonable adjustment. So is that something that's quite common, or so the feeling of being singled out, being treated differently, being the disability being highlighted because the manager is now focusing purely on the disability?
There is this fine line between assisting the employee so that they are able to do their job and then nannying the employee. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing can lead to other prohibited conduct claims such as harassment or
grievances,
or Section 15 or grievances. Again, it comes back to this communication with the employee, what they feel is going to be beneficial to them. The worst thing an employer could do is assume that they know what should be done, because not everyone will suffer from a disability in the same way, for example. And so assuming is usually where employers end up in, you know, muddy waters. Having the conversations is, you know, crucial in these circumstances.
So in the case that I'm talking about, I think one of the points that was raised is that the manager said, I know exactly how you're feeling. And this person really did take offence to that, of how can you know how I'm feeling when you don't live my life and you don't have my disability?
Sometimes employers are in a bit of a rock and a hard place because they want to look empathetic. They want to look sympathetic to the situation. And so sometimes they might say things to an individual that specific individual takes offence to. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it will always be discrimination. So, mm-hmm. for example, that would sound to me a little bit like an harassment type claim, mm-hmm. which is unwanted conduct that has the purpose or effect of violating someone's dignity within the workplace.
Would that mm-hmm. would that fly? Like,
Well, as part of that test, the tribunal looks at whether it was reasonable to take offence to it in the circumstances. Yeah. So where you've got an employer that looks on the face of it to have said that in a compassionate type way, it's probably unreasonable for the individual to have taken offence.
What if it's typed in an email?
Emails are a bit tricky.
How do you assess tone in that?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm asking you these difficult questions.
Yeah, no, it's difficult because the tribunal will look at the context of what the email it is sent in. And if there is, you know, this undertone of being a bit sarcastic of, yeah, I know how you feel, or that kind of thing, then the tribunal can interpret the tone into the email that they see fit. But email's a bit more difficult. But I think the words used just in general on the face of it probably would be unreasonable for the individual to take offence to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, you must get terrible headaches thinking about all this.
There is a lot of legal gymnastics sometimes involved in cases, particularly when they're overpleaded. So you'll get a case which is, you know, you read it and the facts scream it's a reasonable adjustments claim, but then it's pleaded as an harassment claim, it's pleaded as a discrimination arising from. And they all have different legal tests to apply, but it's the same facts. And I think, you know, lawyers and individuals do it because they think if that doesn't stick, then one of them is bound to.
We'll get them for summer.
Yeah.
Having said all that, what happens when adjustment doesn't work? So you try everything and you're at the stage where it's just not working.
And this happens quite frequently in terms of employees still end up going off, you know, sick, for example. They don't come into work, they're signed off with a number of different reasons. There are a number of different things that can happen after that. It might be that another adjustment is trialled, depending on the set of circumstances. That might be something that's open to the employer. If it's a case of there's been a number of different trial periods of adjustments that's been tried and nothing seems to be working, the employee isn't productive, they're not coming into work or other things, then capability dismissals are an option. Mm-hmm. That's often something that employers really don't want to go down, because by that stage they've indicated to the employee, or there is an inference that they've indicated to the employee, that we know you're disabled, we know you're protected under the Equality Act, and if we dismiss you because you can't do your job because of your disability, we're in sort of potential Section 15 discrimination arising from grounds. And so there's massive reservation about going down capability dismissals at that stage. But ultimately, if there is nothing that the employer can do, they are not obliged to keep paying the employee simply because they're disabled. So it is an option for them, but they have to make sure that their rationale and their communication and all the processes are evidenced, written down, because if it does get to a tribunal, they have all that evidence there to support them. And there's other things such as redeployment. Is there another position within the business that the employee could do? And again, case specific, it might be that there are other positions, but they're more physically demanding, for example. Mm-hmm. So there wouldn't be an obligation to move them into another role. But they could trial another role to see whether that would be suitable or not. And things such as ill health, retirement.
Yeah. I think sometimes there can be instances where you just can't help this person. No matter what you put into place or whatever you suggest, it's always going to come up with a big no.
Yeah.
Yet then when you discuss, is there any alternatives apart from reasonable adjustment, potentially could we look at other things? It's like, well, no, I love my job. I want to keep doing it.
And this is where, it comes back to this communication, because sometimes I think by this stage, the employer doesn't want to say anything to the employee that what they will take offence to, or that might end up, you know, being a litigious point. But if it is explained to the employee, look, we've done this and this happened, we've done this and this happened. As a business, we can't do this because of X, Y, and Z. If the employee knows that and they're told that, they feel heard, they feel seen, and they understand why, So you are less likely to face litigation in those circumstances if you've explained to them the reasons why. And I think most employers don't. They just say, we're not doing that. We can't do that. That's not reasonable. But to the individual, they don't really understand what that means. Whereas if it was explained to them by, you know, a face-to-face meeting, then they will understand, and they will understand what has tried to be done and what has been done and what hasn't worked. There are a few cases that I've had where the individual employee is a little bit in denial about their abilities. But 9 times out of 10, most individuals know the restrictions that their disability causes them. Mm-hmm. And just simply explaining to them how that affects the business and why things can't be done, sometimes they will accept that.
Yeah. So it sounds as if sort of communication's the key, really, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In denial, like they overestimate their own abilities?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes, I've had cases where going through quite intensive treatment, disability itself causes quite substantial symptoms. Treatment also causes substantial treatment, but convinced that they will be going back to work and that they should be working, you know, even if it's a couple of hours a week.
Mm. Is there a predominant demographic of person that behaves like that? Just out of curiosity, in your experience.
Awkward person.
To me, yeah. to me, it sounds like a pride thing. That's what that sounds like. Like someone who doesn't want to accept that they're maybe on the downhill in some regard. And
yeah, well, I think it's both. I think it's pride. I think there's a mixture of pride and hope that, you know, nobody wants to be unwell. No. Nobody wants not to do their job. And I think that's something that employers often overlook, that reasonable adjustments and the law around them aren't there so that individual employees can abuse or take advantage of the employer. They are there so that the employee has the ability to work on par with other people without disabilities. So by not giving them reasonable adjustments, all that's doing is affecting the business, mm-hmm. because they are there to implement strategies in steps so that they can perform their best for the business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So how important is training your team so that they understand what they should be doing in terms of support?
Again, absolutely crucial, because if these are the ones that are taking the requests and implementing the requests, then they really need to understand what the obligations are. Because as I mentioned before, ultimately, if a claim is brought for a breach mm-hmm. of the provisions, that's the employer as a whole. And it doesn't matter if the individual isn't sued themselves, the employer is still liable. Now, there is a defence in the Equality Act under Section 109 that is a full defence. So if they've done all they reasonably can to educate their staff on not breaching the provisions of the Equality Act, then they might be able to defend a claim in that sense. I think that answers the question.
Yeah, it does. Mm. So therefore, if you've got a workforce that's trained, that would be taken into account at tribunal, where it's, you know, the judge would potentially look on and say, well, you know, what more could they have done? They've tried their very best. Whereas if they've just gone, I don't need training, can't be bothered with it, the question would be asked.
Yeah, and it comes down to credibility in tribunal. If somebody hasn't had training, you can say to the tribunal, this is not something that they take seriously, but here they are trying to tell you that they haven't breached the provisions and they don't have a policy, they haven't done any training. You look like an employer that's not bothered.
In terms of takeaways, so from today, obviously, training is important. I think the biggest takeaway from today has been communication. We can all make mistakes, but we can also all apologise to them in the moment, at the point we realise a mistake's been made, and correct it. I think that's one of the key things that throughout my career I've always advised. Just admit you've made a mistake and apologise, and let's get that right. Let's get it back on track.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Communication in all employment relationships, whether it's discrimination, reasonable adjustments, anything, communication is key.
Yeah. So how many times would you say you think to yourself, why did you just not apologise?
Oh, probably every case I've done.
Well, besides why did you do it, it's also why did you not just admit that you'd made a mistake?
Yeah. You know, when it gets to tribunal stages, nobody wants to say sorry because they think that infers guilt or liability in some sort of sense.
Yeah.
But acknowledging that we could have done things differently doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be liable in a tribunal.
Okie dokie.
We have got one final question for you. It's quite an easy one, to be fair. If you could recommend a guest for us, if you have one, who would you have in your place?
I did, actually, and I messaged her to make sure it was okay. Mae Martin from Park Lane Plowden.
Okay.
Mae Martin. Add it to my notes. Does our fearless leader, Alyssa, know Mae Martin? Are they in the same circles or?
Oh, I'm not sure.
No.
She's junior employment barrister.
Okay.
Okay.
She came to the bar after me, but very fierce advocate.
Perfect.
So definitely a great one to have on.
Right.
Haven't we? We'll look into that. Thank you for that.
Appreciate your time. Appreciate the mild few interruptions we've had as well.
Yeah.
From like ringtones and such. We are normally more professional.
No, it's all right.
I promise. But yeah, hope you had a good time.
Yeah, no, enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Good. No, wicked. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time, everybody. Like, comment, subscribe. Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.